Yeah. That's interesting that you heard that about the Chinese name, because...
I read that from your website.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah, okay. Because I was teaching last April in Beijing, and my students there decided to give me a Chinese name.
Student decided.
Yeah, and they were very serious about it. Anyway, I want to thank all of you for coming. I want to thank HKU and HKU Space for the opportunity to do this. I can't quite remember how many times I have actually spoken here, but it's probably close to a dozen, you know, ever since the program started. And it's always a highlight for when I come to Hong Kong, is to meet with groups of you, people that want to come hear me, as opposed to the students who have to come hear me. Okay? So that's always a pleasure in that case. Now, we're going to talk tonight about web science. And the first thing I want to ask is that how many of you are familiar with the term web science? Whoa, that means that I can totally influence you, doesn't it? It is a fairly new field, and it's gotten a little bit of coverage in some ways. There was a recent article about it in Scientific American. There's been articles recently about it in the Communications of the ACM and a couple other of the computer trade publications. But it's a very exciting concept, and I hope that tonight I can get you excited about the concept and get your feedback about whether or not you really think it is a meaningful area of study. Of course, the first thing I have to figure out is how to get this to work. There we go. I do have a few caveats at the beginning. And that is that I am actually a collaborator with the Web Science Research Institute, and I'll tell you what that is in just a second. However, tonight I'm actually speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for the WSRI, okay? So I just want to make that clear, because I might say some things that, you know, perhaps are not necessarily the party line, as it were, for the WSRI. All right. I will mention what that is. The formation of the WSRI was announced in 2006, and it's primarily a collaboration between the University of Southampton in the UK and MIT. And as you can see here, its whole purpose is really to understand the structure of the web, and to formalize, as it were, the social and technical aspects, the collaboration of the way that people use the web. And it tries in that way to bring together people from a lot of different fields, fields that either impact the web or are affected by the web, in the hopes that will give us a greater understanding of really what the web is, be able to understand what some of the things that have happened in web technology have, and try in some way either to influence or predict the future of the web. Okay? WSRI is having its first conference in a couple of months in Athens. So as my point of being that is, it certainly has now, in fact, become an institution, and there's a fair number of academics that are writing papers and doing research and getting together in a major conference to discuss the whole new area of web science. Okay, now, before I talk about what web science is, I'm going to keep you waiting before I define what web science is. So, before we ask what is web science, I have a more simplistic question for you. And that is to say, you know, what is the web? Right? That might seem like kind of a silly question, because all of us know what the web is. All of us use the web. all of us have our particular perception about what the web is. But where else to find a definition about the web than Wikipedia? Because Wikipedia knows everything, right? But if you look at this definition of the web on Wikipedia, it defines it as being a system of interlinked hypertext documents accessed via the internet. With some more stuff. But for most people, that's not what the web is. Because this is a technical description of the web. You know, this is a geeky description of the web. This is appealing to computer scientists, right? It really, in the way that most people use the web, doesn't really describe what it is. Okay? Now, another thing about it, when we talk about what's the web, you know, you have to sort of think about, like, why do we use it? Why do we use it as a noun? Why do we say the web? We don't say the email, right? We just say email. You know, we don't say the news in the sense of, like, Usenet or something on that. Why do we think of it as a, you know, with a noun? Why do we sort of now think about it, you know, as a entity? Right? As a thing, not just an application and not just a process. And also when we think about it as a thing, you know, we talk about doing things to the web, right? We search the web. You know, we navigate through the web. We put items on the web, right? And when we go to web pages, it's like transporting ourselves someplace else, right? Which is a little bit different than what you have in terms of a lot of other processes. Once again, think about the other things you do on the internet, and none of them really quite have that same sort of perception as the web does. People do tend to think about it as being a very unique type of entity that they can interact with. Okay? So here are some of the possible definitions, as opposed to the one that we saw on Wikipedia. A distributed document delivery system. That certainly is more descriptive for some users than the one that was in Wikipedia that was talking about internet protocols. Or a tool for collaborative writing and community building. You know, for people that are on Facebook or something like that. That, or people who use wikis and blogs. That might be the kind of definition that they have. A network of protocols that support e-commerce. For a lot of people, that's what the web is. A place to sell things, to buy things, etc. Once again, that's a very meaningful definition, you know, for a specific group. A network of cooperating computers like this, that's one like we saw in Wikipedia. Or something like a large cyclical directed graph made up of web pages. That's a definition that a mathematician would love. Right? Thinking about the topology of the web, or the web as a graph. Right? So really, the definition of the web, as we say, is not so simple because it's very closely tied to the way people use it, the way particular groups of people use it. Right? So I think, too, there's a number of technical perspectives. So here's a few that I sort of think are relevant in terms of how we might define, how we might view the web. There's the computer science perspective. That's the one that's in Wikipedia. That focuses on the infrastructure. How it's put together. But says nothing about how it's used. There's the information science and knowledge management perspectives. These are the people that think about, you know, the web as a mechanism for delivering data. You know, so they might be concerned more about content as opposed to the protocols and the infrastructure that put it together. You've got social intelligence perspectives. You know, these are people who look at it as being a social phenomena, right? Once again, a way that they can communicate with colleagues or with friends or something of that nature. All right? And last, as I say, there's an information perspective. You know, people that are thinking about, you know, applications that run on the web. You know, and it's not limited to e-commerce, certainly not. But they typically think about the web as being some kind of vehicle that allows them to spread an application. You know, software as a service is a good example of that. Or cloud computing, if you've heard of that, is a good example of that. Right? So there's a lot of different technical perspectives that people, you know, can have on the web. There's also the user perspectives, I believe. You know, if you're a web surfer, if you're just someone who likes to sit down and visit websites, then to you, the definition of the web is just a bunch of sites that you can go visit. Might be entertainment in that sense. If you're a web shopper, you know, then the web is like this mall out here, except it's in hyperspace, cyberspace, rather. Okay, so you can just go from shop to shop and buy things. Right? If you're a web searcher, then basically you might think of the web as only just being some kind of network of search results. You know, where you can find information about certain topics. So the pages that you look at mainly might just be search results, like from Google or something of that nature. If you're a user of Delicious, everyone knows what Delicious is? Delicious is a system that allows you to categorize websites by adding metadata to them, by adding tags to them. And it becomes a very social phenomena. So to someone who is a Delicious user, what you have out here is just the web is a web of tags. Because you're interested in the way people have categorized parts of the web. The blog authors, they even have their own name for it. They call it the blogosphere. They don't even call it the web much anymore. It's just a collection. They think of it as simply being a mechanism that allows them to support the creation and the transmission of blogs. And lastly, you know, to somebody like a Facebook user, or a LinkedIn user, or a MySpace user, or any of the social networks, to them, their perspective is just a way to get in touch with their friends and colleagues and contacts. It's a way of letting their contacts know where they are and what they're doing, and sharing ideas and sharing common interests. So what we can see here is that between that technical perspectives and the user perspectives, we aren't getting a lot closer in terms of coming up with a truly agreeable definition of what the web is. Right? All right, now, so we said, what is web? We'll ask the same thing about what is science. And I would contend, too, that science has different perspectives for different audiences. You know, if you're in the physical sciences or the biological sciences, what you really are attempting to do is come up with laws and rules and whatever that allow you to explain and predict natural phenomena, right? That's what physical sciences are about, in that sense. Social scientists. Now, some would argue that social sciences are not really sciences, right? Because they don't have the same methodologies that happen in physical science. So what they really try to do is to understand how human society works. It doesn't have to be human society. You've got people studying the social structure within chimpanzees or gorillas. But they're really looking at interactions between living things, right? And trying to understand what drives those interactions, you know, and how, in fact, they might be able to either understand or improve the social structure within which they exist. So those are social sciences. And then you've got computer science, right, which we all know and love, but computer science is strictly made up. It's not really a science. Okay? It's completely synthetic. It has nothing in common with these kinds of things. In a physical science, we say we want to understand the science behind the phenomena. In computer science, we say, let's create a phenomena. Okay? We're not trying to understand one. We're trying to come up then with an algorithm or something of that nature that allows a computer to do what we want it to do. So in some ways, it's almost 180 degrees from what the natural scientists might try to do. So once again, where we couldn't come up with a good generalized definition for web, I would contend we also can't come up with a terribly generalized definition of science. So where does that leave us? That suggests that web science is going to be very complicated. Okay? But the question here then is, which of these sciences, physical, biological, social, or whatever, describes the web, or computer, which one describes the web? Because we know that neither the web nor the world is static. It's always changing. It's a dynamic system. We know that the web evolves, and often it revolves, you know, in response to the pressures that are put upon it, social impacts that are put upon it, technical changes that occur, etc. Pressures from science and commerce and the public and politics, etc., all really sort of drive the way in which the web changes. And so consequently, you really can't take those different kinds of sciences that we had on that previous slide and say, this is the science that explains the web. So if none of those sciences explain the web, the natural thing to do is to say, we've got a new science. We've got web science. Okay. So now our definition of web science is basically, you know, the realization that the web is a new technical phenomena. It's something that's never existed before in the past. We don't have any experience with something like the web. And it has technical aspects, it's got social aspects, and it is a growing organism that's not going to go away. Right? And so as a result, it says that the web needs to be studied as an organism. It needs to be studied as an entity. This is why on that other slide I said, you know, we think about the web as a noun. We think about it as an entity, right? So we should study it as an entity. Okay? And if we understand how it operates, just like the other sciences, we might be able to engineer around it, right? We might be able to affect what it's doing. So really, that's what web science is. I would contend, you know, it's a new field of science that involves a lot of different disciplines, not just the computer scientists, but also social scientists, lawyers, ethicists, a lot of different disciplines, you know, which help to explain the phenomena that's the web and the relationship between the entities that are on the web. Okay? Questions? Comments? Is everyone awake? Okay. Now, quite frankly, you know, I'm an old physicist. So, quite frankly, I would have preferred the term web cosmology, as I say. Because, you know, I like to think about it, the physical science perspective. And so if you know about the definition of cosmology, you know, basically it's saying it's the study of the origin, the evolution, and the structure of the universe. Something like this. You know, this is a representation of the ways in which stars and galaxies and things like that are put together. Right? And pretty much that's what web science is doing too. All right? So, in reality, we could think about the web as being some kind of universe. Because this right here, you know, this looks kind of like that. This picture I actually got off from Microsoft. And it's basically showing the relationships between entities in a social network. Right? So these two pictures kind of look, you know, similar in their own way. So that's why I said I'd like to call it Webb's cosmology, but that name would never catch on. People certainly have no idea what cosmology might mean. So let's go back to web science. That's an argument that I would never win. Okay. To me, web science is all a matter, basically, of scale. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Just like in the case of the physical sciences. You know, when you look at it at the micro scale, what you do see is technology. You know, what you do see are web pages that are written in HTML or something of that nature. What you do see are links, right? If you look at it at the small level. But when you start taking these small things and putting them together, then what you start seeing is the more complex behavior of the web, the one that's less predictable. You know, and that's where that starts occurring sort of at the macro scale. Right? It no longer becomes just about the technologies that happened at the micro scale. Right? And then you throw into that this idea of human and social involvement. You throw in that with the idea where the web is now affected by human interaction. It's affected by things like legal systems, monetary systems, and things like that. Introduces a whole new idea of what happens as you scale it. All right? So here's the idea right here. You know, when you think about a website or a web application, you know, you have an idea. And you design it. You design a web, obviously web designers, that's a perfectly necessary field of endeavor. And they use it during the using technology. And they consider, in fact, as part of this idea, the social aspects of that idea. And so the result is something that happens at the micro scale. And that would be perfectly okay if you had a website that only you or a small number of people use. But as I said previously, the complexity comes, and therefore at the macro scale, when you start linking all of these ideas and all of these social phenomena together. So that's why I say it's all an issue of scale. It's all an issue of how closely You examine the phenomena. Okay. So why web science? Okay, so part of it is because we know that the web is dynamic and we know that the web is evolving. And we want to understand that. But we also know that there are parts of the web that we don't know about. You know, some of you may be familiar with the term the deep web, the dark web. Right? This is the web that search engines don't get to, because the content is hidden in databases, or the content is hidden inside of intranets and local networks. Okay? And so our picture of the web does not necessarily include that part of it. That's the deep or the dark web, because we can't easily get to it, just like dark matter in the universe, back to my cosmology example. We know as a result of this that what we do see is only a small sample. I mean, Google might claim, you know, to be the best indexer in the world, right? And perhaps index more pages than any other search facility. But they will also acknowledge the fact that they only search and only index a sample, a small portion. Maybe not even a legitimate statistical sample of how big the web really is. We also don't have any idea of scale. We ask the question, what is the percentage of web pages that are updated daily? There's absolutely no way we can answer that question, because we don't have any idea about the forces that drive people to modify and update data. We don't understand the phenomena. I mentioned about search. There's no way we can answer this question. Also about web topology. You know, as I said, I gave you the definition that mathematicians would love, talking basically about nodes and links and topology. We don't really understand what that looks like. We don't really understand what a web graph would look like. We think we do. Google made a fortune with its PageRank algorithm, which somewhat is very effective in describing what the topology of the web looks like. That's why Google gives such good results. But we don't know whether or not that's really the best way to do it. And then, of course, too, with web science, we really don't know what the artifacts are, what elements of social interaction are added to the web. So these are the rationalizations for coming up with a new area, specifically an area called web science. So if it's a science, especially if it's like a physical science, then basically what you do is that, you know, you have a theory, you put together an experiment, and then you analyze your results. That's really what science is, but of course I'm prejudiced in that sense. Social scientists may not agree with that. But, so what could scientific theories for the web look like? Well, sometimes you'll hear things like, every page on the web can be reached by following less than 10 links. Well, that might well be true if we really know what the topology of the web is. But there's no way we can prove that statement. Can we put together an experiment that would suggest that that statement is true? Or the average number of words in a search query is greater than 3. That's what often you hear, that kind of statistic from search engine companies. Right? But can they prove it? All they can do is just look at some subset of data that suggests that it's true. So it's strictly empirical. There's nothing else behind it. Or I've seen the deep websites receive 50% more traffic per month than surface web. This is the web we can see, the visible web. So that dark web, that deep web that we've got out there, It's getting a lot more traffic than the web that we can see. So what's happening out there? All right? Some studies have indicated that web page download time is a log normal. That sounds good. But can we prove it? Or there's the suggestion that the web is a scale-free graph. You know, if it's not uniform. You know, there is a suggestion that there are, on the web, a couple of very large nodes. And if you take those nodes out, it will dramatically affect the behavior of the web. That means there is scaling on the web. So the question is, can these be easily proven? Are they good theories? Who knows if they're good theories? What constitutes a good theory? If it's a science, we might know what constitutes a good theory. So what we're seeing here is web science is a intersection of a lot of different disciplines, as I said earlier, that affect the growth of the web and are affected by the web. So certainly at the top you've got the computer science people, but also you've got such things as the mathematicians, the biologists, the sociologists, lawyers, the economists, media. So there's a lot of different things in these areas that are affecting the evolution of the web. And I made the comment earlier when we defined what web science was that, you know, it attempts to be multidisciplinary. And these are a few of the disciplines that certainly we recognize play a role in what's happening with the web. So how can we bring these people together to help us understand what's happening with the web? It's always hard for me to say to my computer science friends that, you know, you might have created the web, but it's out of your hands now. You're not going to affect its future. You've got to give up part of the control because there's a lot of other disciplines that probably and likely have more impact on the web's future than you do. It's not just computer science anymore. What are the roots of web science? In 2001, Bernardo Huberman, who's now at Hewlett-Packard, wrote a book called Web Ecology. And what he realized is that the web actually is an incredibly large and useful social network that he actually could perform social experiments on. Right? To see how people interacted with each other. Okay? There's the field of web engineering, which once again I'm prejudiced towards. Web engineering says, okay, then what we really have, just like a physical science, you know, when you put together a web application, why don't you try to use good principles of engineering? The same way you do when you build a building or build a bridge that have science behind them. Or at least have well-established methodologies behind them. Okay? So consequently, you've got to understand those before you can do that engineering. And that's extremely important because obviously web applications are becoming more and more complex. People are becoming more and more dependent upon them. So they have to be reliable. They have to be maintainable. They have to be available. And that's what engineers are supposed to do. So these are some of the precursors to where web science may have come from. All right, so a case for web science. All right, now this first one is an example of how I say, You know, we don't understand the web. I like to use the example of the dot-com bust. Right? Around the turn of the century, you know, 2000, people thought, what the web is good for is for making money. And a lot of people made a lot of money with web technologies. But all of a sudden, it collapsed. A lot of people lost a lot of money. What happened there? Why couldn't we have predicted that? What was it? Once again, the web might have at that point told us who's in charge, and it wasn't us. Okay? Why couldn't we predict it? Is it because when we started doing business on the web, we tried to use the old business models and that just didn't work? But in the end, once again, it's because we didn't really understand how to do business. Maybe still don't understand how to do business on the web. Another thing is, how can we understand what's happening in terms of security and privacy? Right? In the early days of the web, it was all one great big happy family. Right? People really wanted to share information. Right? And now, the web is a dangerous place to be. You get emails with links to websites that are trying to steal your personal information, or trying to sell you illegal goods, or something of that nature. What happened that made that naivete, that made that way the web used to be change? Well, it's easy to come out and say is that people recognize the potential of doing criminal activity on the web. Why couldn't we have predicted that? Why in security, which security is what I'm teaching now at HKU, you know, why does security always have to be proactive? In other words, along comes a threat, we respond to it. Along comes another threat, we respond to it. Why couldn't we predict these threats before they're actually materialized? Okay, why does a system like Wikipedia fly in the face of reason? What do I mean by that? Basically, is that if you had walked into the office of a venture capitalist 10 years ago and said to them, I want you to give me a bunch of money because I'm going to create an online encyclopedia where users write the content, they would, I suspect, look at you like you were crazy. Right? Because those were the days when Encyclopedia Britannica was online. And Encyclopedia Britannica was the utmost authority on everything in the world. And certainly, how could users provide that? But it obviously works. I suspect most of you, certainly I love to use Wikipedia, have done it. But how did that happen? What's the appeal of social networks? Why do people do things on social networks that they would never think about doing, you know, except online? There's the legal issues, internationalization, etc. How will the web affect the way we do science? And then how will a web of objects operate? Let me tell you what that is, because this is one of my favorite areas. My vision of the future web is it's not going to be a web full of pages. It's not going to be a web full of applications. It's going to be a web full of objects and events. And so therefore, when I say that you're on the web, I don't mean that you have a URL. or a blog or a home page. I mean that you are on the web. You are an entity on the web. We're seeing that, you know. We're seeing that now. Coffee machines are on the web. All kinds of entities, and it's only a matter of time before the web becomes not just pages and processes, but objects that we deal with. How is that going to work? And I say here, these, all of these things we've got, these aren't technical questions. The answers to these questions, you know, cannot be provided with technical answers. They're more social questions. So we can say here that the goal of web science is to understand the complete web, both the surface web and the deep web, that would allow us then to engineer the web's future. And in the end, what we certainly want is to ensure that the web's social benefit. I gave this talk once, and when I had that bullet about ensuring social benefit, somebody said to me, does that mean that we don't want to become like the Matrix? We don't want to be controlled by technology? Well, that's not such a silly question, because we know now that technology can control us. It's left to its own design. It happened with the dot-com bust. Right? So if we understand it, we might be able to affect it and make sure that it serves our benefits. Now, what I have in this particular slide is an interesting thing that attempts to explain why web science is not computer science. And basically here, it has to do with the issue of metrics, topics, and focus. I will make all of these slides available to anybody who wants them, you know, through HKU. So I'm not going to talk in each one of these about each one of these elements. But if you select a few of them, you can really see how it has moved from a computer science definition to something that's more of a social definition. So, for example, Moore's Law. You know, computer scientists are interested in such things as flops, you know, operations per second. On the web, you don't care about that. A company's not interested in operations per second. They're interested in how many page views they get per month, or per day, or per hour. An example of topics. Computer scientists talk about computer networks. Web scientists talk about social networks. Now, social networks might include computer networks, but computer networks do not include social networks. The focus of computer science is on computers. The focus in web science is on users. So it's really showing, once again, as I said, that the whole goal of web science has moved away from the technical definition, the computer science definition that we originally had, you know, of the web. All right, here's something for you to think about in the same sense of where I think we, you know, we might be now as far as the web is concerned. Like electricity. You know, here's electricity in 1800. And electricity in 1800 was nothing but a collection of artifacts. Right? You know, here's an electrostatic generator. So you could generate some electricity. You know, here's a Leyden jar, so you could store electricity. Right? It was just the definition of electrical science was just a collection of objects and artifacts. There was nothing that tied them together. And then, of course, in the 1880s, along comes Maxwell. And he comes up with Maxwell's equations. That's quite different, because all of a sudden what he has done is, with four equations, he has described electricity or electromagnetism. Which means that now not only do we understand everything that was going on here, but we can predict, engineer, what can be done with electricity that we could have never possibly done with just objects. So the question, food for thought when I say here, is that what are the analogies for web science and web design? Because, you know, right now, aren't we thinking about the web simply as a collection of objects because of the way we use it? Not because we really understand it? So, in some ways, aren't we really like this, as far as the web is concerned, instead of being like this? So, I think that in web science, a lot of disciplines have the opportunity to work together. You know, there's a lot of unexplored questions, like we've talked upon in some cases. There's a lot of room for research. There's a lot of room for relationships between people that are theoreticians, people that are experimentalists. And then actually the engineers and the architects of systems. Because in reality, then, all these people presumably are going to want pretty much the same goal. You know, in the past, they really have not agreed, perhaps, on what the web is. But, if nothing else, they all agree that the web is critical to their area of expertise. And they all agree that the web is something that's not going to go away. It's going to continue to affect their discipline no matter where they are. So the challenges that we face here is that web science suggests to us that maybe we can use non-technical concepts to understand some of the phenomena that we observe in the web. And thereby engineer it to our benefit. You know, if we understand what happened in the dot-com bust, we can make sure that it never happens again. Actually, in that case, you could say that web science is a little bit like economics. You know? Why? How did they let? Is economics a science? How did they let the world economic crisis get to where it is? If they understand economics so well, it suggests that they don't. Right? So isn't the web evolution the same way? Okay? We can see how the web can serve us in the future and affect its evolution. Not necessarily be the victims, as it were, of the way in which the web evolves, but affect the way the web evolves. So thank you very much.